Welcome back to the show, Vic Nuzzar and Randy Abjanda. It's the People's Show with Dominic Schermatti running the things. And you as well. 650. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. So yesterday, you and I celebrated a 10-year anniversary. I've been with the company for 10 years.
Yep. Well, you celebrated. Yeah. I just wished you a happy anniversary.
We celebrated. We went for a drink.
That's true.
Today, we get to celebrate a 15-year anniversary, but it's not any of us.
Okay. I was going to say.
A 15-year anniversary for an iconic sports clip. Not your favorite one, the bowling.
Who do you think you are? I am! Not that one.
Not that one. But another iconic one, Mike Gundy. Turning 15 today. That old clip. Have we got that? All right.
We don't.
Mike Gundy's world famous clip.
We'll come back to that a little bit later on. But I am, this depressed me when I saw this.
Why? Because you remember happening in real time?
I was 21 when this thing, when Mike Gundy erupted in that press conference and went off. And I was like, oh, yeah, what a thing, being 40. Like, I'm 36 now. That was 15 years ago, man.
You're
nearly 40. That is the most depressing thing I've heard in a long time.
Oh, well, let's hear from Mike Gundy here.
If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother of children. I think this is worth reading. Let me tell you why I'm talking about this article. Three-fourths of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete. And he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. And that's all I got to say. Makes me want to puke.
All-timer.
Great one. Just a great one.
All-timer. Let's bring in Adnan Verf from MLB NHL Network. Mike Gundy turning 15 today. At least that clip does. What do you remember about that? And like, what are your favorite coach blow-ups?
Well, that's a pretty great one. I remember being at ESPN at the time, and I had not seen the clip yet, and somebody referenced it. Like, I was on SportsCenter, and someone said something like, oh, man, I'm 40, and I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And thought, well, that's kind of an odd thing to say. I'm like, I don't know that about that. And then, of course, I thought spliced together with 40 is the new 30, which people were fond of saying.
Sure.
It was, of course, outrageous. It was just way too many damn baby boomers trying to make themselves feel bad. They were making themselves feel bad. Oh, no, no, oh, 40 is the new 30. I'm like, well, you're not exactly Ryan Reynolds, so you're not exactly 40 is the new 30. But yeah, it was a great meltdown. I feel like college football has given us a lot of those. You can always get some good blow-ups there, memorable quotes. Hal McRae is the all-timer for me, of course. It's got to be something with baseball. That Royals one back in the 80s where he's just throwing his phone around. He's in his long johns. I mean, that to me was pretty special when I think of a coach losing it. But, of course, Mora, I mean, playoffs is indelible. Like, I think 50 years from now, you could say playoffs, and people know right away what you're talking about.
Yeah, Mike Ditka had a couple as well where we're just that whole experiment was just a disaster. So he had a couple of money clips, though, back in the day.
Yeah, Ditka definitely had a few as well. I mean, I remember, you know, I met Ditka a couple of times at ESPN. He's, you know, a nice enough man. You know, he's just obviously a legendary player. But it was right around the time, I think he was starting to lose his mind with some of the stuff he was saying politically. So I can't remember really indulging Mike Ditka in a long conversation. Other than thinking it's Mike Ditka, I'm like, we're probably not going to get along with a lot of things we're going to say to each other. So I'm just going to stay quiet right now.
I'll pitch this to both of you guys. Have you ever had a coach blow up on you?
No. I was never a very good athlete. I played high school basketball, but as I played, I rode the bench. So my coach liked me because I was a good guy who never complained about playing time. I was always very good. And as normal now, you'd expect, I was always loud and very supportive, encouraging.
Right.
Soccer, my coach liked me. I got the same thing because I wasn't a very good player, but I worked hard. I was a good team. And I never complained. So I don't think I've ever had really a coach yell at me because I wasn't very good. I think they yell at the good ones.
Or
they know they're capable of better.
As media, though, have you had a run-in?
Oh, you know what? I haven't. I haven't been fortunate. I haven't done a ton of reporting in my career.
See, you're always so likable, Adnan. You're so personable.
Yeah. Well, I tell you who loves me. The college basketball coaches would love me. I didn't do a lot of games, but I did a few at ESPN. Those guys, I don't know why, they just like that. I think they like this. It helps sometimes you're in the studio. Honestly,
sure, that's
because
true.
They see you in the studio, they go, okay, I know this guy. Like, you know, the late, great John Saunders, who did a lot of games. He was also in the studio. Like, oh, I know that guy. I've seen him on TV. So it kind of gives you a little more rope with those guys. I'm trying to think, even when I was in Canada, like, I remember I would interview those CIS coaches. Those guys were great. To this day, I could text McAuliffe or Rashmadani about Glenn Constantine. He was a Laval coach. He was awesome because we were there to the Vanier Cup for a week in Saskatchewan. I believe Sarah Orlesky was covering the other team. I don't know who they're playing. But I was with Laval. So like, when you're covering that team, you're like become like family. Like every day it's minus 30 Celsius. And Benoit Grew, the quarterback, love him. I remember Glenn Constantine. He was like almost deferential to me. Like the game ends. Laval wins the Vanier Cup. And rather than celebrating with his teammates, he's like waiting for me for the post-game interview. I'm like, no, coach, you can go celebrate for a minute or two. And then he said to me, you were cheering for Laval, right? I'm like, of course I was, coach. I've been following you guys all week. It's minus 30 outside. Let's go get a bison burger. It was great.
Okay, so good relationships with the coach. I never had one lose it on me either, although I did not cover the Canucks full-time when Tortorella was the coach. I imagine if I was there at that point, there might have been a story to tell.
I once had a junior coach light me up.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell the story afterwards.
Okay. So,
but right. Yeah, and called afterwards to not apologize, but to kind of hash it out. But yeah, I've had a coach light me up. It's rather entertaining. let's get into
just
it with that.
Just to make it clear, I have been scolded by players, just to make it so that I'm
sure.
Not
sure.
Michael as picks making me sad. Mike Weir didn't like a question I asked with the Masters, and I'm admittedly not a golf guy, so probably was a bad question, but he said something to me, and I'm like, okay, forever, I'm cheering against Mike Weir.
What was the question?
He was a total jerk to me. I'm trying to remember now. I remember my buddy Puffy was there, and Duffy was there, of course, because TSN was there, and I was there for the score. I can't remember for the life of me what it was, but he gave me a withering glare and then kind of made a joke. And the other reporters, which is the worst, but when they laugh at you, I'm like, yeah, you're just laughing at your kids at that. So I was more annoyed at the other reporters. And he said something like, oh, your first time here, something like that. I'm like, okay, Mike Weir is dead to me. I hate Bright Grove, Ontario. I was always cheering against this guy. And Vince Carter was a little bit moody, although I'll give Vince, you know, the share of the doubt because of the fact that he had left Toronto on acrimonious terms, and I was bringing up Toronto, let's say, 6 months or a year after the fact. So,
right.
Look, I get it. He doesn't want to talk about Toronto. Fine. But Mike Weir, total jerk. Don't like that guy.
I'll credit all the other surrounding media in my moment when they all lowered their mics and they backed away. Nobody laughed, but they were just like, you're on your own on this one.
Yeah, we're supposed to be part of the community. If Bick's getting scolded, you're like, hey, dude, you can't.
They're like, you're going to be in the camera shot, and we're backing out of this one. all right, what are you more excited for, 61 or 700 for Pujols?
Got to be 61. I have a media pass, as you guys know, and I'm close to New York City, but 25 kilometers away from Yankee Stadium, something like that. So I was toying with the idea yesterday. I was off. I said, God, I should go to Yankee Stadium and sit through a Pirates game just in case Judge hit 61. I can say I was there. But then, of course, more important, my role as a father to four kids. I'm like, I cannot take off during the weeknight. But it's a little bit easier on the weekend. So I'm hoping, this. Fellow Brown man, Adam Amin, is calling the game tonight for Fox. Close friend of mine from our days at ESPN. So I'm pulling for Adam. He might get to call 61 tonight, which is amazing, considering 5 years ago he was calling college wrestling for ESPN. So I'm hoping Adam gets to have a call of a lifetime tonight. But selfishly, I'm off on Sunday, and I feel like I can sneak away, and the kids are a little easier on the weekend, to Yankees-Red Sox Sunday. So I'm hoping Judge gets 61 tonight for my boy Adam Amin, Stacey Pride, and then I'm hoping I get to go to Yankee Stadium Sunday, and I get to watch Judge hit 62. Pujols, though, I'm currently at work right now, and we're here on Pujols' watch, whenever he does come up and see what he does. So, two away from 700 is amazing, but for me, it's Judge. I mean, obviously, Randy's a Yankees fan. He's well aware of the fact this guy's trying to chase the first Yankee triple crown since Mantle in 56, Gehrigan 34. The run he's been on this September, it's just electric. So I'm rooting to see Judge.
I'm with you there. I obviously have my bias there. But, you know, just seeing the whole Maris family there as well, being a part of the process, being supportive of Aaron Judge. You had the cut-ins. I know Michael Kay was calling the game last night, but they had national cut-ins. It reminded me of, I know we look back at that era of baseball now with a different look because of the steroid use and the PED use and all of that. But, like, it reminded me of that moment of, wow, we're cutting into games to get this coverage. Mm-hmm. It was a special moment for baseball. It didn't happen last night, but whenever it does, it's going to be special because you have all of those components at that.
Oh, 100%. Right now, I don't even know what game we're showing. It's Twins and somebody else. And I'm in the studio watching Cardinals Padres. We're going to do that cutting exactly what you're describing. Okay, it's like the news, right? We now take you to San Diego. Joe Musgrove is on the mound for the Padres. Here's Albert Pujols, 2-8 from 700. Let's lock in. And I'm with you. It's you know, we are not news people for good reason. We are sports fans. But it gives it an element of that breaking news sound. You feel the importance of this moment and the weight of it. And, you know, I'm younger. I'm older than you guys, but I remember 98 vividly. I was in my second year of college, and I followed that home run chase avidly. I remember it's a very odd thing. One of the broadcasting teachers goes, you know, give me your name, but give me a name you'd like to be called. I don't think I've ever had a teacher say that before. So he came to me. I said, my name's Adnan, but I'd like to be called Sammy. He looked at me and he goes, are you a baseball fan? I go, yeah. He goes, I'm digging for Sammy Sosa. So it was the weirdest thing. The whole semester, we'd call me Sammy. I'm like, yeah, okay, well, Sammy's not going to be here. And September 8th, Sammy was not there because I was watching the Cardinals game and McGuire hit number 62. So I'm with you, Randy, on the whole concept of this feels special. It feels momentous. And especially with Albert. Like, I still can't believe he's this close. Like, he was at 679. He did 21 home runs at the start of the year to get to 700. I go, there's no way. Yeah. He only faces lefties. That's 300 at-bats. It's maybe 14 home runs, maybe. And the fact he's at 19 and knocked on the door and now facing righties and now especially turn back the clock in the second half, it's a remarkable story. And I said this before about Pujols. My brother's a big Cubs fan, right? So he was telling me, he's like, oh, God, I hate Pujols. I hate the Cardinals. And I said, well, here's the reason to root for Pujols. And because honestly, it goes down to human interest. His ex-wife, they've now split. But when he first met her, she had an infant daughter who was suffering from Down syndrome. And you know, a lot of guys would have been squeamish or said, I'm not interested. Albert dove head in first. Like, I'll never forget. There's a great 60 Minutes profile about how much work he's done for children who are afflicted with Down syndrome and, like, how much work he's given back to the community. Roberto Clemente Day just happened September 15th. Albert Pujols is a previous award winner of the Roberto Clemente Award in terms of humanitarian efforts and charitable efforts. I'm going to go back and watch it again. I'm telling you, it is incredibly moving. And when he left Los Angeles, there's a great article, I think, by Stephanie Epstein from SI. People kind of like mocking Albert. Oh, the Angels contract was terrible. Never loved to fight. And she wrote an article about, you know who's going to miss him? The Boys and Girls Club of Los Angeles and those suffering from Down syndrome. They said he was above and beyond how much work he would do and give back to them. So Albert Pujols, A-plus guy.
Well, I think part of the reason it's so captivating right now is that it's too like very interesting personalities right now. If you want to go back to 98, like in the moment, it was so endearing. These guys were so full of energy and it was such a nice contrast of Sosa's personality versus McGuire. And, you know, when they would play in the same game, you could see them interact and it was so captivating. And now it's, here's Aaron Judge who's kind of doing it to the man, like for the Yankees and also against the Yankees because they're going to have to pay up in a big way. We've all had that story of, hey, I want some more money from your employer and here he is showing him up. And then it's the history of Pujols and it's these two guys kind of chase their own individual marks kind of together but separate and them kind of coming to a conclusion at the end of the year is really captivating.
Yeah, part of what you're referring to, Vic, is also their franchises. Like,
yeah.
The Yankees have won the most World Series. The Cardinals have won the second most. With respect, this is not like they're doing it for the Royals. This is not Wade Boggs getting his 3,000th hit with the Rays. This is the Yankees and the Cardinals, historic franchises, incredible fan bases. They love their baseball. They know their history. You know, I think that adds to the allure and the elements of all this. And, again, for Pujols, that number to me is insane. 700, only four players ever, if indeed he gets there. And to Judge, again, we know what happened in 98. You know, we became a little numb. These guys hit so many home runs. But look at how few everybody else is hitting. That's what makes it special. When you've got, like, your next closest competitor in the American League in home runs is, like, two-thirds of the way there. That just shows you how dominant Judge has been. And to your point, Vic, about sticking to the man, yeah. Who has not ever felt in life undervalued and wish they could tell their employer, okay, I'm going to go show you. And he's shown them. I mean, bare minimum. He was offered 213, bare minimum. My friend John Heyman, the colleague of the New York Post, has said he's going to get bare minimum 288. That number's going up. I think it's over three. $100 million because of 1 year. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Unbelievable. You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Adnan Virk, MLB Network. All right, let's talk some Blue Jays as well. They've got a series against the Rays coming up here. And this is a pretty important one for them because they're essentially duking it out for that first spot in the wild card. The AL East is, I'm sure, a goal at this point, but it looks unlikely. How big of a series is this for the Blue Jays this weekend, just with the way that the wild card's setting up here and what that first spot means?
I think it's vital, Randy, because there's two aspects of it. One, we all know Rogers Center will be hopping. And they would be fired up for everything to happen. But it's also the fact that if you win that series, you'd avoid the Astros in the second round, right? So if they're the prohibitive favorite, as we can all agree on, the fact that you could potentially avoid them if you can win your 4-5 and then face the Yankees, who I do think, by the way, have regained their mojo. They won 11 of the last 15 games. But they're not the Astros. Right? They're not going to be as intimidating or as daunting a challenge as them. That's why I think it's so important to get that 4-5. Yes, home field's important. A three-game series at Rogers Center is preferable to playing in Seattle or at the Trop, cavernous and as gloomy as that is. But I also think avoiding the Astros to potentially the ALCS is why it's so important that Toronto goes in on a winning note.
You want to go into it feeling hot as well. The Mariners have kind of sputtered here recently, dropping games to the A's back-to-back. Now, they're up right now, but projecting the Mariners in these final 2 weeks here, how are you feeling about them?
I think it's interesting because with the Mariners, I think that, again, they've got a really good balance of their starting pitching. And I think when you look at Logan Gilbert and, you know, obviously Robbie Ray, last couple starts hasn't been as good. But I think they've got a really strong balance of starting pitching right now. And the past, you couldn't necessarily say that. Because Luis Castillo has been a difference maker. Ray's more comfortable as a number two. Then you've got Logan Gilbert, and you can add in those other guys, George Kirby as well. Like, that's a pretty formidable quartet of starting pitchers. Look at their bullpen. Again, they've got different guys that can mix and match. And then offensively, we've talked a lot about J-Rod, how impressive he is. But I think you got to get Eugenio Suarez right. You got to see him hit home runs. Ty France has got to be a vital contributor for you. And Mitch Haniger. I think if those guys can supplement a little bit, you can see why Seattle, for some people, like I've been asking just colleagues and friends around, all right, if it's not the Astros, who's it going to be? And the number one answer I've gotten from people is the Mariners. They feel like that could be a sleeping giant.
All right, we'll keep an eye on. Actually, sorry, before we let you go, because you do the Cinephile pod as well, Amsterdam. I keep seeing these trailers. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's a credible cast. I mean, it's from David O. Russell, who's an absolute freak. I mean, if you just Google his name, you see how he's, you know, one take is not nearly enough for him. He wants 100 takes, and he's maniacal. You see him, like, on the ground, like, you know, screaming at the cast and stuff. So I don't know how he does it, because I would just think you would alienate yourself from all the cast people you work with, and yet he gets a lot of repeat actors. Like, there's Christian Bale working with him again, I guess maybe because he got Christian Bale an Oscar for working with him on The Fighter. The great Robert De Niro's in the film. You got Margot Robbie, who I saw this week on the late-night show. I think it was on Fallon talking with the Movies. So the cast is insane. John David Washington and so many others. I don't really know what it's all about. I know it's a period piece, and it's opening October 7th.
But that's what I like. Like these trailers, it feels like there's just enough mystery in it that I want to say, okay, I really have to watch this because it looks spectacular.
Yeah, you never want a trailer that gives everything away, right? But,
yeah.
But you do have to have a trailer that gives you something. You never want to see a trailer and go, I don't know what that's about. I remember watching the Mad Max Fury Road trailer and going, okay, I never watched the original Mad Max films. You know, I was 3 when the Road Warrior came out. But this looks like a crazy action movie, and they really sold it well with all these blurbs of, like, you know, best picture of the year, best action film in years. But let's do it. So similarly, with a film like Amsterdam, you're selling the star power, couple of quick lines, a little bit of wit. Hopefully that's enough to cure the audience.
And then we always appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Vic ran deep. It was a little dicey there for a second. We almost had to go to a live look at Pujols. I'm in the studio. They're about to start yelling at me. I would have pretended it was a bad connection, but the Padres got out of it. We're now in the bottom of the first. Jack Flaherty on the mound. Live looking is coming up a little bit later on.
All right.
Regularly scheduled programming.
Awesome. MLB, NHL Network, and Cinephile Pod at Adnan S. Virk. We'll talk soon, pal.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
It's Adnan Virk.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
It's all true. All too true for both Bick and I.
Almost there, man.
A couple years away.
Y'all old.
Yeah.
You'll get there one day, 16-year-old Dom.
One day.
So the story I didn't tell. So what happened was I got to a game late, and I only saw like a little bit of the OT.
Uh-oh.
And there was a couple of bad penalties. Like, admittedly, like, they were really bad penalties, okay? And the team had to go on 5-on-3. They were scored against, game over. So in the scrum afterwards to the coach, I was like, oh, refs kind of were rough tonight. Again, I've watched 6 minutes of this game, maybe 6 minutes, because I had to do some other work.
Yeah,
and
You're making an assumption on those 6 minutes you watch, which is a very risky play there, Bick.
Yeah, and so I learned afterwards that there was other calls that went favorable to the home team earlier.
Ooh.
That they got goals on, and it was like,
uh-oh.
The mic's like lowered, and it's like, how much of the game did you actually watch, Bick? I was like, what? He's like, when did you show up? And I was like, oh, I was like, overtime. And like, just like lit into me.
Yeah.
And so I was wrong, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was very much like, you don't know what you're asking right now. You're wrong.
Just ripped into
it. And just the lowering, like, it is imprinted in my mind. The lowering of all the other mics and everyone just backing away.
It's like a record scratch.
They also make fun of me for it. I still talk to everyone that was there, and they're like, hey, have you asked any bad questions to Bruce Boudreau recently? And just like, lowering of mics. And then the day after, they're like, hey, It wasn't that bad of a question.
Okay. It happens in every profession. Either you get like a, in our profession, either you get the absolute grilling or you get like the look.
Yeah.
Which is, that look. When other media starts to back off, that's what happens. But yeah, that happens. Like, I've gotten, everybody gets looks. If you ask a question, part of it is maybe your question. The other part is the mood of the other the player. I remember I was in one scrum, no names being mentioned here, but I believe the Canucks had scored two power play goals that night. And JT Miller was asked about, how do you get the power play going? And similar to you, everybody's just like, oh, that question was asked. And JT's response, he could have like probably expressed his opinion a little bit more openly, but he said, we scored two power play goals. Next question. Like, you know, he probably did the reporter a favor on that one.
The diplomatic answer from JT Miller. 650-650. You can always chime in with your thoughts as well. We want your wrong answers only submissions too. We kind of joked about this earlier with Irf. What is your version of this is the year? Brock Besser was asked about 30 goals and he said, this is the year. So let's get your submissions. What is your version of this is the year? I'm amending mine one earlier of saying like, oh, I'm going to lose 10 pounds.
Yeah, that one's the easy one. Yeah. I got another one as well now.
Okay, wrong answers only. Big six. This is the year.
Ooh.
This is the year. What is your version of this is the year?
I'm going to beat Richo in a 40-yard dash. I'm going to have my revenge.
Reach?
That's a deep pull.
That is not happening.
Yeah, let's go.
It will happen. It will happen.
He lunged in here. He's just like exercising.
He heard. He was hearing very closely. That's a right answer in my book, Vic.
How did he hear that so fast? Isn't there like a 7-second delay in
this? Richo hears everything.
No, my door's open.
Oh, I see.
He's all-knowing, Richo. Especially when it concerns...
That is not going down.
Especially when it concerns his calves.
650-650. We've made our declarations. What are yours? What is your version of this is the year? Brock Besser was asked, 30 goals? Can you do it this year? This is the year. Send in your declarations. We'll get to them on the other side as well. We'll do turf trivia and much more. Plus the people's picks coming up. You're listening to The People Show. It's the People Show in hour two. Thanks for making us part of your day. You can always text in 650-650 and be part of the show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Canucks preseason coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Black and Lee. Suiting up just got easier for modern suit and tux sales, fashionable menswear, and same-day rentals. Visit blackandlee.com. We'll talk to Stacey Rost coming up in about a half hour. Host of at Seattle Sports 710, getting ready for the Seahawks weekend. Do they rebound? Chance to capitalize on Atlanta, another middling team?
Do you still look forward to Seahawks games? I know it's only week
Watch
two.
Watch every snap, dog.
Okay, I'm just saying. I had to gauge the interest. Yeah, are you still interested?
Yeah. Not you like know, you with the Dolphins.
I love the Dolphins day in, day out. They're frustrating. And
you
watched
every snap last year?
I ditched a couple.
Well, there you go. See, that's what I'm saying.
I want to ask here in Vancouver, because there's a lot of people that were on the wagon that may have left off the wagon. Jumped off.
650. Going to break, we asked you, what is your version of this is the year? Brock Besser making a declaration. 30 goals, this is the year. By the way, they're doing a scrimmage right now. We'll bring you some updates on that in just a moment.
Yep.
But this is the year. Wrong answers only. What are they saying in the inbox? I said big six. This is the year.
Yeah, and I said a 40-yard dash between me and Richo and me beating him.
Yeah.
This is the year. Vicky and Poco coming in with this one. This is the year Richo decides to become a Dolphins fan again. Wait, never mind. That's a right answer and an inevitable act. She's right.
This one. The Leafs win the cup. Unsigned text. This is the year. Also, Leafs make it out of the first round. This is the year.
A lot of Leafs.
Yeah.
We got this one from Brad, the Bruins fan. The Bruins win the cup. Wrong answer, but so good.
Converting my beer league team from beer to vodka soda post-game. Shooter, Tudor, Tyler. This is the year.
Okay, at what point does that switch start to happen? Because I've started to do that myself the last couple of years, where it's like...
So what, we won't even call it a beer league anymore?
No, it's just like, you know, your drinking habits change. You're right. Like, oh man, beer's not doing so well.
I mean, I've made that switch.
I don't know, I had a drink with you, you had beer yesterday.
I'll have one.
I had the glass of wine, you had the beer.
I've become kind of like Vito Corleone. I'm drinking more wine than I used to.
Sorry, but nothing beats a watery beer after athletic activity.
I agree, but I've definitely lowered my overall consumption of it.
Beer is better when you have less of it because you enjoy that one beer more. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just like, you know, going nuts.
Yeah.
Like shotgunning beers is
too old for it.
Nah, man.
Too old. I'm a man. I'm 40.
It's also wasting beer.
This one, Gord in Campbell River. This is the year I don't throw the remote while screaming at the referee who screwed over the Canucks yet again.
That's definitely a wrong answer because it will happen at some point this year, man. There's 82 games. We got this one. Along the fitness guidelines or the fitness submissions yet again. Caribou Mark, wrong answers only. This year, I will stop drinking and start running. Ha 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 ha. Implying it's a wrong answer.
Jarvis, we're actually just talking about Chip Wilson off air. Jarvis says, this is the year where our wildest dreams come true. Billionaires like Chip Wilson and others will collaborate and make a pitch to Adam Silver to get the 32nd NBA franchise with Seattle, which I'd pray for it becomes confirmed sometime this year.
A super team of billionaires here in Vancouver. Get together.
This is the year.
Well, we know one owns Rogers Arena.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're interested in buying a super expensive franchise, but...
Costs a lot to get an NBA expansion team. Like what, at least $3
billion? $3
billion. At least.
And Sarver's selling in Phoenix now as well. So what's that price going to be? Probably around $3
billion. $650. Kevin and Kahulam, this is the year Kuzmenko, Petey, and McKay have outscored Pearson, Miller, Besser. Book it. Well, we haven't seen Kuzmenko here.
Well, we're seeing the scrimmage, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but there's a little bit of buzz starting to develop with the play. This one, Jeff the Lumberjack from Langley. Randeep buys himself a pair of Blundstones. This is the year.
Blunnies, baby. This is the year.
No.
Do you got a pair? Nobody can see you shrug.
I know.
No one
You're not streaming here. You should have to say yes or no. No.
I was holding for a dramatic effect.
Oh, okay. Of course Dom has it.
I wasn't sure. I was just
That's there, a no for me.
The utility
you
of
know what I'm wearing
city,
right now?
Like Vancouver.
This is for the stream, folks. Vessi's, the true shoe, West Coast shoe.
Are you sponsored?
Hopefully soon. No to Blundstones.
Oh, Joss and Sycamoose. That's not nice. Password gets reinstated. This
oh,
is the year.
Man.
Ooh.
Okay, this one hurts me. Rager. Yeah. This is the year Randy finds his old Bull starter jacket.
I've heard that story.
Yeah.
Man, wore it to the Killarney Rec Center swimming pool at one time. One time! And I forgot it there. Never saw it again.
Man, starter jackets are making a comeback. This is
I want my old Orlando Magic starter jacket. And my Grizzlies one.
And that one hurts every time I get reminded of that one.
Yeah.
My parents were so pissed. It's like, sorry, we were how many hours at our respective jobs to buy you that jacket? And you forgot it the first time you wore it.
Hammer pants, making a comeback. This is the year.
Timbo Slice, this is the year traffic in the Lower Mainland won't affect my morning commute.
Oh.
Because all the road work was done on time.
Brother, this morning was rough.
It's going to be a great city once they finish building it.
We got this one from Jeff in Mission. This is the year that Louis Erickson finds his goal-scoring touch, his 30-goal goal-scoring touch. Yet again.
Keith the Water Guy, this is the year I get a colonoscopy.
Good for you.
I would, but it's the wrong answers only. I would encourage you to do
Yeah, actually go get those.
I don't know if you saw that video. Ryan Reynolds and...
The bet, so... Yeah.
I would encourage you to do so.
Is that something that you do when you're 40?
Yes.
Is it? Is that officially a thing?
Yes.
So the theme of today's show is...
Turn 40.
I'm a man, I'm 40! All the things you need to do when you turn 40.
Getting a colonoscopy!
Sportsnet cares.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should, though. Yes, absolutely. We got this one. This is the year OEL earns half of his AAV playing on the first pair.
This one, wrong answers only. This is the year seats at Rogers Arena will change color. Donkey.
You know what? If they don't change the color, at least, like, add some padding or, like, fix the ones that are there.
I don't care. I've said this numerous times. I know you. I honestly don't care.
You
about
don't slum it with the regular man
in your plush ivory tower.
The Encore.
What are you talking
suite.
About? No, I go to games all the time. I don't care
in the Encore suite.
Unless they're not like wooden, old school, like Agrodome seats, or
I wouldn't even mind that,
or Empire Stadium tradition. Like just metal seats. I'm good. We'll survive.
Look at this elitist.
This is the year I become a Kelly Sutherland fan. People are really going after the referees here.
This is the year the Coyotes get 50% capacity.
I'm not going to lie. I saw Kelly and I thought Kelly Clarkson was the text. I'm like, this person's really passionate about Kelly Clarkson.
No, Kelly Clarkson.
Kelly Sutherland. This one. Wrong answers only. One last one. Reachable buy and proudly wear a number 12 jersey. Nobody wants a 12 jersey.
Actually, last one here. This is the year the boys start looking bad on TV. Which boys is that?
Amazon series. No?
You've never watched it? I haven't watched it.
Oh.
Dom, you've watched it?
No, but...
That would make sense.
That's the TV show.
Please specify which boys. Yeah. Are you talking about the show? Or are you talking about us? Or are you talking
Maybe
about...
Maybe it's us.
Am I starting to...
We ain't on TV.
Is getting closer to 40 going to affect me on TV now?
Or
is
the
is
Murph
that what
hit?
You're implying?
The Murph hits?
What will be this year's turtleneck? Last year was, Murph started the game. I involved myself in the turtleneck. What is this year's trendsetter for the TV?
They're called Dickies.
Pardon me?
No, we're Dickies. Not doing
that. It's, you've seen The Big Bang Theory, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I forgot the character, but he always wears a Dickie.
It was about us, by the way. The texture is texted back in.
Silver Foxes.
You guys start looking bad on TV.
Okay.
I've never been on TV.
I don't know if you've heard of makeup texture. Or Botox.
Or Snapchat filters, baby. We'll put them right on the cameras.
It's a new innovation Sportsnet's going to have this year. We're gonna use the Instagram filters on TV so we look half decent.
Good shouts into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll have turf trivia for you in just a bit as well. But they are doing the scrimmage here, Randeep. And the buzz, the training camp buzz is already starting for the Pettersson line.
And especially the Pettersson line, Elias Pettersson's looking solid right now. He's got the dangles, he's got the vision, something that you expect from the guy. And, it's nice to see on day one. It's a scrimmage. But the chemistry, and especially Andre Kuzmenko in transition, is looking good. Andre Kuzmenko doing the spinorama. Apparently Ian McIntyre also tweeting out that is very much a thing. But Kuzmenko, Pettersson, Mikheyev, dynamic and creative, as our very own Brendan Batchelor puts it right now. So, seen some of the clips that are going around. Obviously, we're not there, so we don't see every second of it. But you can see the high-end skill has translated over at least to the first day of training camp. The real game is different. The real game is nobody's going to lean into him and step into him and really knock him on his rear end. But at the very least, what you see is you see that skill, you see that speed that can join in transition. And that's what I look at this line to say. Go back and Besser and Pettersson, when they remember that Lotto line year, they were tough to handle in transition as well. It wasn't the...
No, they were one of the best lines in hockey for a variety of reasons.
For one of the reasons was also they added a layer in transition. You saw him coming down the wing, either passing to Besser or taking that shot. Mikheyev brings that speed. He's going to be able to jump up in transition. Pettersson has that. Kuzmenko in Russia had that. Can he translate that to the North American ice? And so far, early on in a scrimmage, don't want to give it too much hype either. But at the very least, the guy can skate. He can keep up with these guys. And we know he can shoot. We had Daniel Bochner on the show, who's his former coach out in Russia, saying the best part of his game, didn't say about playmaking, he said it was the shot. That's what he said. If you're going to watch out for something, watch out for a shot. Some early returns in training camp anyways.
650-650. Keep coming with your thoughts into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. All right. If you missed it so far today at camp, again, day one takeaways. We mentioned the top nine. Pearson, Miller, Besser playing together. Kuzmenko, Pettersson, Mikheyev, Garland, Horvat, Podkolzin, Joshua, Dickinson, and Lazar. Now, that one is situational. You can see different guys play together in different, depending where the faceoff's taken, lefty, righty. I wouldn't be too concerned about who's centering that line just yet. OEL with Quinn, Myers with the Kaiser, Rathbone with Chen, and Dermott with Pullman. We talked about who got the biggest opportunity We've touched a bit about who's got the most pressure on them. Who for you has the most pressure, and which camp battles are we keeping an eye on?
I think the most pressure is still going to be, you know, Nils Höglander's in that conversation for me, just based on the fact that it seems like there's a decision coming down the road at some point where it's, hey, this is where you're starting camp, but it's going to be on you to show what you can do. And if you can't, you might have to go down to the A. You might have to go down Highway 1 and play in the AHL. That still is pressure, but I think that's the obvious one. The one that I'm looking at, and he's in one of the top four lines you mentioned there, I think it's Jason Dickinson, where he's there with Joshua, he's there with Lazar, he's on the fourth line, but he still has a lot to show in camp.
It comes down to a simple question. Do you not want to get bought out next year?
Honestly, right? Like, if you look at it, last year was terrible. He needs to show he can stick in the lineup, and with this added competition. Remember, I'm not saying he's got to put up points because that's not who he is. That's not who he was in Dallas. That's not the type of player he is.
It's also just unrealistic to expect, hey, 30 points is coming from Jason Dickinson.
No, and last year I think there was an idea of maybe there's an uptick because, hey, he's going to potentially play on the third line and maybe you see a little bit more out of him. We saw what he's able to offer on the offensive side of things, and it's not much. But can he be a good defensive complement to Lazar, Joshua? Can he do something that he didn't do last year, was give you that level of consistency? Can you finish when you get the opportunity? You're not expecting to put up 30 points, but Bick, if you're in a position to play sound defensive hockey and chip in and just be a little bit better offensively than he was last year, it was not necessarily about the points. It was, he had so many opportunities. Finishing was not there at all. And I understand some guys are not going to develop the shot. You know, if you got a muffin of a shot, you're going to have a muffin of a shot at this level. It's very rare to see a guy turn his, you know, below average shot into one of the best on the team. It doesn't happen. But can you just be a little bit better when it comes to timely scoring? Because he did get a lot of opportunities last year. There wasn't a lack of opportunity. But the long term, I think, is where Jason Dickinson's going to have to focus on. Like, it feels like a really important year for him to define what he is as a pro player at this point in time. Because last year was pretty bad.
Someone's texting in here, 650-650, Brian from Brook Mountain. What's a good year for Kuzmenko? We talked about guys like Garland and Mikheyev yesterday. What is a good year for Kuzmenko? Now, I think you have to frame it from, like, he's also on an ELC, right? So we don't know a whole lot, and he's not being paid a whole lot. What is a good year for Kuzmenko?
Playing in the top six, if he stays in that.
You are going to have to perform.
Right, like, early on, we were saying, okay, is there going to be is he a third line? It depends on what the line looks like. If it looks like this, you're playing with the most skilled player in that top six, and Elias Pettersson's got the skill. Like, JT Miller gets his points in a very, very different way, but Elias Pettersson is skilled. He's kind of running the scrimmage today as well, based on what we're seeing on Twitter and hearing from some of our colleagues. I expect probably in that 40-point range, 40 to 45. Like, I know people are going to say, hey, if you're playing in the top six, you need to do more. There's going to be probably times in the season where he's going to have a drought. That happens with all pros, but especially guys that are making that transition to North American hockey. So I would probably say around 45 points. It doesn't, you know, me and, like, looking at him and Pod Colson, I don't see a huge difference. You can probably make both of those players interchangeable to a certain degree.
Sure. And look, some of these players are going to have slip-ups and slumps throughout the course of the season. But if you look at a guy who's making a transition, and yeah, he is a, you know, older pro. This is not a true, quote-unquote, rookie. But just pair it to what we saw last season from rookies. You know, someone like Cole Caulfield at 43 points. Do you expect more or less? Right? So it's a lot, but I kind of look at, like, 35 to 40 points for a player who's going to have his slumps and he's going to slide further down. Like, when we picture these things, I think we always just assume, hey, the average ice time is going to be the same all year long and you're always going to play in the same role. That's not what happens. There's injuries. You're going to get nicked up. You're going to go down the lineup. Someone's going to be hot that they're going to have to give more minutes to. So I look at it and I say somewhere in the range of 35 to 42 points. That's what I want to see.
I'd go a little higher just based on the fact that if that line sticks together, I expect a little bit more. If, that's a big if.
Now,
though,
if it works, suddenly we can change our thoughts sure. as it goes. I'm not going to say, oh, it's working just because of we're halfway through one scrimmage here.
No.
But on a guy on an ELC, yeah, he's an older player. But for a rookie coming into this league, I'm looking at somewhere 35 points. And that's factoring in that he's going to get that top nine role probably no matter what.
Okay, what do we know about the early part of the season training camp? He was going to get that role because I'm sure that was a part of the pitch.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a part of the pitch to say, you're not just seen as a guy here. You're not going to be battling for a fourth line role. We want you to play with the skilled guys.
You're going to get the opportunity to make sure this can work.
But how long does that last for?
Yeah.
You got to produce yourself. You got to, you know, bring up some points. You got to build that chemistry with your line mates. And we'll see what that means in actual preseason games. We'll see what that means in actual regular season games when we get to that point. But the reason that I think we can expect to see it early on is, remember, there's a strong pitch made to make him choose Vancouver over Edmonton. And in that case, you know, early on, if it works, Bick, I'm probably gravitating a little higher, around probably 45, but I'm not going much higher than that. That's probably my limit.
650. You can always chip in with your questions as well. I want to go back to the pressure as well. Dickinson's a good one. You know, he's solidified in his role, I think. It'll be a battle. But you know who's got a lot of pressure on him? Spencer Martin, right? If we're picturing this out and saying we want to see 55 games from Thatcher Demko, that's still 27 games for Spencer Martin. That's still 54 points on the line. I think there's a significant amount of pressure on Spencer Martin. Because if we're across the league decreasing number one goalie starts, that means your secondary goalie has to be qualified. Now, I think he's sharp. I think he can be a backup goalie in this league. It's a matter of how many of those games is he going to play and can he thrive in? Because the workload is going to be different for him as well. At this level, this is not something that he's done. So someone's got a weird amount of pressure on them that often gets overlooked. We know the impact goalies can make on a game. If you want Demko to play 55, 52 games, that means the next guy has to take on a considerable amount. And just as that number goes up, that's the amount of points that are on the line in that scenario. 50-some-odd points are going to be contributed to him.
Yeah, as we saw last year, the backup goalie position is one that is scrutinized in the city, right? Like, when you play in Canada, every game matters. Every single one. Do you put your best foot forward, and do you wow, you know, the fans? Do you do enough? It's not even about wowing the fans. It's about just, are you giving him Thatcher Demko a day off? Are you getting that W occasionally? And last year, even though Yaroslav Halak early on played pretty well, his numbers were up there. He contributed to the highest 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL early on in the year, especially. But what did we see? When you needed it, he couldn't provide that relief. He couldn't provide that rest for a Thatcher Demko. But Bick, I look at the beginning part of this year, even preseason. You know, you don't put too much stock into preseason, but I think with Spencer Martin, you're going to focus on how he plays. You're going to focus on how the Canucks play in front of him, because they did change their game last year when he was between the pipes. Do you do that again? You know, that's, if you're trying to stick to your identity, I would assume that you're saying, okay, we don't want to reinvent the wheel every time Thatcher Demko is not in goal, right? So you had a summer, you had time to train, you had more time to work with Ian Clark. How does that translate? Colin Delia early on this year, he's probably not going to get that many games. We talked to him at the Milford earlier this week. It's a lot of, you know, information that he's taking in right now. It's very similar to what Spencer Martin did last year, where Spencer Martin and Abbotsford didn't get many games. So you saw Mikey DiPietro play more. You saw Artur Seelovs get a couple of games in as well. This year, it might be very similar. So there's a little bit of a cushion there. But if the season rolls around and you don't get quality starts, you do have some options there. His name is Colin Delia. You bring him in for a reason, not only to play at the AHL level, but you want a little bit of a security blanket if the Spencer Martin conversation goes in the direction you don't want it to go.
Before we get to Turf Trivia, programming note here, Canucks Central will have a special guest. President Jim Rutherford will join the show on the first day of training camp. They'll join them at 3:05 with Satyar Shah and Dan Riccio, so just over an hour away. All right, a lot still coming up here on The People Show. We'll talk to Stacey Rost on the other side, who will join us getting ready for Seahawks and Falcons for week 3. We'll do the People's Picks as well. Before we go, though, have you made it easier today, Randy?
Yes. I have. I thought yesterday was pretty easy.
2 days ago was very difficult. Yesterday was semi-difficult. It was a little tougher yesterday. Wasn't
no,
it?
I thought it was easy.
It was easier.
It was easier. Right, you were going back to NCAA scoring.
Yeah, that was still, you know, common sense stuff. This one, a lot easier.
All right, 4-pack of tickets to the BC Lions versus the Stampeders at BC Place this Saturday. What is the question, Randy?
Very simple. Who scored the Canucks' first goal of the season last year?
Oh, okay.
Talking 2021-2022.
It's a bit of a layup.
First goal of the season for the Canucks. Who scored it?
If you know it, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Again, who scored the first goal of the season last season? If you get the answer right, we pick your name. In the draw, you're going to the Lions Stamps game this Saturday. Text in to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. One last wrong answer only here. We're asking, what is your version of this is the year? Wrong answers only. I like this one. Unsigned text. This is the year Dunbar Lumber builds the stage for the Canucks Cup Parade. That's creative. Although it's a wrong answer. But nevertheless.
It could be a right answer.
I like that
scenario. I think they would build a quality stage, by the way.
Perfect.
If I were building a stage, yeah. Ken Priestley is the guy I want to build.
100%. All right. Good stuff in the inbox. We'll be back in a bit. You're listening to The People's Show.